What's going on, Cardinals fans? I've got a special guest with me today, Josh Jacobs of the Deal in the Cards podcast, formerly Newt News. You know this guy. You love this guy. We're going to get into some Cardinals talk today. And I asked Josh, I said, what are some topics you think are interesting right now to Cardinals fans? And I think he made a good point about the pitching situation for the Cardinals being pretty interesting, because compared to where the Cardinals were last year in their rotation, I do think this team has made some improvements. And arguably the exact types of improvements, Josh, that the front office thought they might be able to get out of this group. But I know that in the offseason, Cardinals fans saw these moves and they were a little bit skeptical of, well, is this rotation really going to be good enough? Now, I know the team is 9-10. The record is not what anybody necessarily wants, but they're in the mix compared to where they were last April. That is somewhat of an improvement. What are your thoughts on this situation at large, Josh, as it pertains to the rotation the Cardinals kind of set out to have, and the one that it looks like, at least through 3 weeks or so, that they're putting forth right now on these games?
Yeah. And I mean, starting with the offseason, none of us came into it thinking this would, I mean, this probably was more one of the more realistic plans they could have went, but everyone knew or wanted or thought they needed to go out and get two frontline starters. So Sonny Gray was the start of it, but Kyle Gibson, Lance Lynn was underwhelming to everyone. I don't think there's anyone who was like A plus offseason that was exciting. But if you told me at this point in the season the offense would be this bad and they'd be 9-10, I'd be like, what is happening? I'd probably thought they had like 4 wins on the season, maybe 5. But it's the pitching and defense that's carried them so far. They're 10th in ERA in baseball. Part of that's carried by the bullpen, which is 9th in with an ERA of all baseball. Their starting rotation is about 19th. But again, it's doing what they wanted it to do. It's not necessarily ace-like innings outside of Sonny Gray, but it's getting into the 5th, 6th inning more often now. Obviously, it was a little shaky to start, but I think like 2 weeks into the season, only like 8 starters had gone into the 6th inning in all of baseball. So like, it's just early season stuff. People don't really go deep in games, but you're starting to see the formula playing itself out now. And Lance Lynn, I mean, he's a guy that he's getting both innings and the quality innings to an extent too. He's had a few weird starts here and there, but a lot of those were weather related. But he's looking like a guy who actually has some upside in this rotation. Kyle Gibson should be that staple guy that eats some innings, gets you to the bullpen. If the offense is performing at a high level, then you should be able to score enough runs to win. Steven Matz is maybe more in that like 5-and-dive realm, but he's doing the job too. I mean, you guys, you and Ethan talked about yesterday how good he's been since July. And obviously it's a little bit frustrating when you can only really rely on 2 times through the order with him. But I mean, that's important to have. And obviously Sonny Gray has been the big addition and has been incredible so far. So it's too early to give like a full stamp of approval to say, John Mozeliak, you aced the offseason or anything, but it's definitely going as according to plan for them so far. And then you look at the bullpen too. Obviously you don't have Keenan Middleton yet, but Kittredge has been really solid, and keeping Ryan Helsley in the 9th inning seems to have really helped him out. He kind of feels like anytime he enters the 9th now, you know, outside of that first game he appeared in the season against LA, he's been shutting it down. Kittredge can come in at any point. JoJo can come in at any point. Gio's kind of slotted back into that like first guy out of the bullpen role instead of the high leverage guy. And I mean, you look at the names they had in the bullpen last season, you would have thought it was a better bullpen, but it was like only one, maybe 2 guys were performing at any time. JoJo wasn't himself at the beginning of the year. Hicks obviously had that terrible April. Helsley was really struggling in April. And throughout the year, you had a bunch of names, but one of them would be on, one of them would be on the IL, the other one would be going through something. Right now, you've got 3 guys that I trust in high leverage situations, and then you've got a bunch of guys that aren't mop-up guys anymore that could give you legit innings. Like even when Ryan Fernandez comes in, I'm like, yeah, this could be good. So will it be sustainable? I think that's the big question right now. And obviously, the offense doesn't turn around. I don't think this team can really win games, but if they could reach their ceiling as an offense, I think the pitching is exactly what they thought it would be. And it's good enough to win games. It's not flashy, and it's probably not enough to do much in the postseason. But in the regular season, this NL Central, I think it could be a winning formula.
Yeah, it's interesting when you mention the postseason. Like, a lot of Cardinals fans want to make that deep run into October, which is understandable. Yeah. That's kind of what the expectation was going into 2023. It was more of a conversation about, all right, we got there in 22, but how do you get to that next level? And then the bottom fell out of the whole thing, so the conversation changed. But I mentioned this to Charlie Marlowe earlier today on a different podcast, Low Hanging Fruit. I kind of thought, if you get into an NLDS situation and you roll out Sonny Gray, Lance Lynn, and then maybe 4 innings of Steven Matz, because the 5th inning has sort of been that bugaboo for him, like, honestly, that's not the worst idea in the world. But almost regardless, you're going to need the offense to be thumping. And then in an NLCS situation, I think you can make an argument that the Cardinals don't really profile in terms of their rotation to have the group that can get them past that round. But you kind of have to walk before you run, which is how we get to, well, this team is 9-10. They are still in last place. And what I think is an improved NL Central. I think we might have to kind of banish that narrative of, well, it's a weak division, so you should be able to take advantage. I mean, right now those teams are looking, maybe they're not world beaters, Josh, but it seems like the rest of the division is at least going to look capable as time goes along. I'm not sure who kind of stands out to you among that crowd so far, but don't you think that there's, we can't necessarily just say, ah, it's a weak division. You should be able to, you should just be able to roll out of bed and win the thing.
For sure. And it makes me really interested to see, I know this is too far in the future, but what 2025, 2026 is going to look like, because most of these teams have young cores as well. Milwaukee is kind of that weird where every single year, I kind of think it's the year they're going to fall off, and then they don't. And I thought, I was convinced this is a year is going to happen, and maybe it happens later. Maybe it's an early season thing. Pirates pitching's legit. Their offense has been better than expected. The Brewers offense has been better than expected. I felt like the Reds would be a little better than they are, but they're kind of coming into form a little bit. The Cubs feel like the most the safest bet of the teams, where I don't feel like they have as high as the ceiling as the, maybe the Cardinals or the Reds, or I don't know if the Brewers have a high ceiling, but I don't see the Cubs bottoming out and being the fifth worst team in the division. So the NL Central is really tough. And then you kind of talked about the formula for success in the postseason too. And I know I kind of hinted that I don't really think it could really do that well with their rotation right now, but if you got Sonny Gray stacked up against any ace in baseball, you're probably going to take that other guy, but you, would you be surprised if he goes toe to toe with them? No. Steven Matz, you trust him for 4 or 5 innings in a game. Could he give up only 1 or 2 runs against a good offense? Sure. And then you turn it over to an elite bullpen. So I already feel kind of confident potentially about 2 games in the series pitching wise. So like in that NL or the wild card series in a 3-game set, I could see them pulling it off. Again, we're putting the cart way before the horse right now. But I mean, that's the biggest frustration that people have right now, is that even if this team can make the postseason, what's the ceiling? I'm not going to say they have a ceiling that can beat the Dodgers or the Braves right now, but I know there's a lot of people that gave them crap this offseason, saying that the rotation's worse, the team's worse, they didn't get any better. And I just think the early results are showing that that's not true, that they were clearly, there were 71 wins last year, right? I just think it's, they're going to be about a 500 team with how they're playing right now. And that's with this offense being so bad. Again, I don't know how sustainable the pitching is right now, but a lot of it feels kind of right. Like, I don't feel like Lance Lynn maybe is outperforming himself a little bit. Sonny Gray's going to come down to earth a little bit here, but Steven Matz feels about right. Kyle Gibson feels about right. This bullpen feels about right. The defensive improvements feel about right. And so it just really feels like they have nowhere to go but up from here. I don't really see it getting much worse than right now. Could they be that team that's 78 wins this year, 80 wins this year, and it just kind of never really figure out how to get it all going at once? I could totally see that, but I don't see them bottoming out as a 70-ish win team. And if they finish fifth in the NL Central again, I think it's because the NL Central is a bunch of 500 teams and they're all separated by 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, I think there's probably some validity to that too. And I think a lot of the angst about the offseason when it comes to how they approached pitching was, and I've heard this from a number of different people and media folks that repeat the same thing. I think folks said, well, you needed another guy who you counted as like elite behind Sonny Gray. It was great to get Gray. I think he fits in really well with this team and what they're looking to do. But he was kind of the only one that you hang your hat on. And then everybody kind of mentally pencils in Gibson and Lynn toward the bottom of the rotation as guys they signed on those 1-year deals, 36-year-old veterans, just to kind of round out the group, which is something they needed, because when the bottom did fall out on last year's rotation, innings was a major part of that. And it was part of the reason the bullpen struggled. I think the bullpen has better personnel this year, but I would also argue that the personnel of last year's bullpen wasn't as bad as the numbers indicated when those guys were just being asked to carry more of the load than I think it was realistic to ask them to do, while still expecting them to be effective. So that's, I think, why people had angst about this rotation. It's like, yeah, they got the 3 starters, Mo said. I think people had it baked into their mind that they were going to make a trade for a guy like a Dylan Cease or a Glasnow. And they kind of hold it against the organization that they didn't, and that they didn't even wait it out and try, right? Like, they got out in front of this thing by signing Lynn and Gibson, and folks said, well, you could have let the market play out. Like, lo and behold, Jordan Montgomery kind of comes back to you on a shorter deal. And if you had been a little more patient, maybe you would have been able to finagle that. But I think the Cardinals and Mozeliak in particular wanted to avoid a scenario where he says 3 starters and then lets it, you know, he kind of slow plays the market, and then suddenly it all dries up and he's left without a boat to be able to ride out the storm in. it wouldn't have happened that way. We know that now, but it's easier to say that with hindsight. Yeah. What I wanted to get to, though, is did the Cardinals maybe have more upside in the rotation than people expected? I think Gibson has been and will be what he is. Hopefully the ERA won't be six, but there's such a small sample of like the number of starts that he's had that hopefully it levels out where there are going to be some bad ones, but maybe 60% of them are good, solid quality start-esque. And then you have, you know, two out of every five end up being rough, like we've seen a couple of his three be at this point. But I want to ask about Lance Lynn, because I still think there's upside with Lance Lynn that probably exceeds what you can expect from Miles Michaelis. Like, I think mentally people might come into the year and say, well, Michaelis is your two. He's your number two. I think Lance Lynn has showed at times the strikeout stuff, and then he can toggle it back like he did in his last outing where he got you through seven, only struck out one, but you don't really mind that when he's pitching in command the way that he did. Maybe Lance Lynn is kind of that 1B in disguise. His ERA right now, 2.1. You said, well, is that going to be something they can sustain? Let's kind of take it piece by piece. What have you seen from Lance Lynn, and what do you think is realistic if I were to put you on an ERA number at the end of the year? Like, is he maybe more the guy that he was before last season when the White Sox were terrible, and look at that, so was he? Or is there going to be some regression compared to what he's done so far for St. Louis? Because I think you could make a case, and I did kind of feel this way to come into the year, he would maybe be the key cog in the whole thing. Because if you thought, he's a number four, he'll eat some innings, versus he's got upside to be your second best pitcher, I think that can swing the rotation in one fell swoop.
Yeah, and I think the upside you already talked about is he's got the swing and miss that people just don't really kind of give him credit for. It's not elite by any means, but it's definitely above average. You could probably average 9.5 strikeouts per nine this year. No one would be surprised by that. And he's also kind of one of those just old school pitchers that when there's no runners on base, he's going to attack the strike zone, fill it up. If he gives up a walk, or, well, he tries not to walk batters, but if he gives up a hit, hard contact, it's whatever. But then we saw that first start of the year. He loaded the bases against the Dodgers, locked it down, got three straight strikeouts. So I think he's just one of those guys who knows how to pitch. So in the first and second innings, no runners on base, he might give up a solo home run, and that's frustrating, but he's going to lessen the damage. He's going to bend, not break. If you asked me to put like an ERA number, maybe high threes is a potential ceiling for him. I struggle to say in the low to mid because they're going to want him to eat all those innings. And so there's probably going to be some starts. He goes out there and they have scored, well, hopefully by that point, they're scoring six or seven runs in a game every once in a while. And he gives up an extra run or two that they could have pulled him, put in a reliever, but they got that extra inning or two out of him. And I don't think he really cares. I think he's in there to get the wins. He wants to perform well, but he's not probably too concerned with the ERA number. I think that the home run ball is still kind of concerned me a little bit this year, and it hasn't really bit him as much as it could have. But again, I just don't think he's going to repeat giving up, 44 home runs last year. That's just like a historic rate. I haven't looked at his fastball, his movement this year on it, but I know his horizontal break fell off by like 3 inches last year. And a lot of people think the flatter fastball had a lot to do with the home run rate. I know the Cardinals said that there was a lot they wanted to work on with that this offseason. So I haven't really looked at the pitch shape stuff to see if there's much of a difference there. But he kind of does look more like the 2020, 2021, 2019 Lance Lynn at this point than he does last year's. Again, it's all this is so hard though, because it's such a small sample size. He could go out there and get shelled in the next two starts, and then we're going right back to like, oh, well, here's the old Lance Lynn again. But I might be in the minority coming into this season. Miles Michaelis to me was the clear fifth starter. I just think he was the guy, this innings eater. You saw his stuff fall off last year. It just, the same issues this year. He's giving up a ton of hits. I think he's better than he was last year, but I just don't see the ceiling there with him. And maybe I'm more in the new school age where I like the five and dive guys, but in coming into the season, I had the second most confidence in Steven Matz out of everyone. But that's shaky at that point. But Kyle Gibson and Miles Michaelis really went as those like four or five guys to me that you go out there, six innings pitch, four earned runs. That's what you want from them. Steven Matz, though, you want those five innings, one earned run ball. Lance Lynn, I guess I didn't necessarily have this ceiling for him so far, but to get those six, seven innings of three run ball. So maybe he really does profile as the two in this rotation. Matz is that like low quantity, high quality guy in the three spot. Gibson and Michaelis to round out the rotation. And then every fifth day, you've got Sonny Gray out there who you expect to win every time he's out there, which you kind of had that with Jordan Montgomery down the stretch last year, but it's felt like it's been a while since the Cardinals have had a guy that you run out there and you are expecting to win every time he's out there. It's really been since like second half 2019, Jack Flaherty, since I felt like there's a guy out there that every time he's there, I didn't care who's on the other side. I thought the Cardinals had a really good chance of winning that game. Otherwise, it's been like, well, if depending on who the other pitcher is that day, what the other offense is, I don't really know how I feel. But Sonny Gray, I feel great about him against any team.
Yeah, and you did make the commentary about you stack up Gray against somebody else's ace and maybe you might lean toward the other direction. I'm not sure. Well, let's let Sonny play this out because, again, a 2.79 ERA last year, I think part of that in our mind, and we're all guilty of this, but you go, well, he's 34, so you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. But it kind of feels like he's in the prime of what he's doing right now. So I might take Sonny Gray stacked up against just about anybody, but we'll need to see him against some other teams, some better offenses. You play the Oakland A's once, and a lot of guys are going to maybe look pretty decent with the team that they're running out right now. Lance Lynn, and you mentioned this too, about him being able to have a swing and miss and maybe get to 9.5 Ks per nine. He's at 8.3 right now so far this season, but that's including a start where he went 7 and only struck out 1 because he really didn't need it. Like, so I think he's going to be a guy that is willing to toggle it on and off. Last year, he was terrible with Chicago. With the White Sox, he gave up all those home runs. The ERA was close to 6.5, and yet 10.8 Ks per nine. So, like, I think he was just going, you know what? I'm going to give up some bombs. This team stinks. I don't care. I'm just kind of going to go do my thing. And he was striking everybody out despite those struggles. They were either hitting a homer off of him or he was striking them out. And then he goes to the Dodgers. And I asked him this at winter warm-up, like, was there some different things they wanted you to do because your strikeout rate went way down, but you did have some more success and kept him in a lot of games with an ERA around 4. And he didn't really reveal anything, but it was clear in his answer that there were some things that they said, yeah, maybe do it this way because we're in a pennant race and we're going to try to get the most out of you to just keep us in it. They needed a certain thing at a certain time. And as a veteran, he can, I think, toggle the way that he pitches according to that. So I just respect a lot about what Lance Lynn is able to bring to the table because he does have the experience to kind of know what's needed from him and then maybe at times what isn't needed from him and basically be able to turn it on in certain moments that he's needed. But I want to get to Miles Michaelis because I thought what you said was interesting. Like in your mind, hey, he's the number 5 coming in, which you typically wouldn't think about a guy who can basically roll out of bed throwing 200 innings per year. That's kind of been what he's given to the Cardinals. But that is sort of what they've described about what they've wanted. You have guys who eat innings. I think they just hoped internally that maybe Miles would be one of the guys eating more quality innings. But is that a realistic expectation for a guy who is, frankly, at the bottom of the league every year in terms of Ks per nine? I looked this up at one point last year after the end of the season, and I think I toggled it to like 100 innings was the minimum, and I may be slightly misremembering. But 3 of the bottom 5 guys in Major League Baseball in Ks per nine were all on the Cardinals. They were Miles Michaelis, Dakota Hudson, and Adam Wainwright. Like, that was really a big part of, I think, why last year's team struggled, because it also coincided with the defense having a sharp decline. And guys were playing all different positions, sort of out of necessity. You have injuries here. You have some, you're trying to keep offense as a priority as well. And it just fell off. And I felt like the Cardinals had this calm confidence about what they were going to do in the offseason to fix the defense. They said, look, Arenado's going to be better. Goldschmidt's probably going to be better as well. Just getting back to career norms. Mason Wynn's going to be our shortstop. You notice how they didn't even really, there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Mason Wynn hit 150 last year, whatever it was in September. And then he comes into spring training as the guy. We don't care. He's going to be the shortstop. I think defense was a part of that. And then you've seen what they've done by bringing in Brandon Crawford to say, Edmund's the outfielder. He's going to be our center fielder and stabilize it. Now, obviously, he's not healthy, but they basically committed to the same thing to this point with Victor Scott and Michael Ciani, two guys who are great defenders, and you've basically seen one or the other in center field no matter what, and they're both not hitting 100. So defense has been a big priority. I tie that in specifically to Miles Michaelis. Because I feel like if you are going to commit to having a rotation built where in their mind, Miles is not the 5, he's more like the 2 or the 3, you almost have to be like just absolutely stubborn about the way you handle your defense and making sure guys are in good spots to be able to thrive and succeed. And even right now, as Jordan Walker struggles offensively, we're seeing him get fewer and fewer starts over the last 3-4 days. I think he started 1 out of the last 4 games. That's another guy who's a work in progress defensively. So what are your thoughts, I guess, to ask this in the form of a question?
Yeah.
Miles Michaelis, you look at the numbers historically, they need him to be better than a 5.8 ERA. We say collectively the rotation has been pretty good. They're like a 4.2 ERA. That's about what you could have hoped for. But if there's going to be room for improvement, does it not have to, in your mind, coincide with Miles Michaelis having the best possible defense behind him? Because we just know he's not going to strike anybody out. That's just been his MO. About 6 Ks per nine, one of the bottom of the league. But can that work at times if the Cardinals continue to prioritize defense?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. And I think you've made this point. Other people have made this point over the last few weeks that, like, people complain about Victor Scott's offense or when Michael Siani's in there's offense. Mason Wynn's been great, but that was one of the guys that you kind of anticipated wasn't going to give you offense. And it's not those guys you need the offense from. You need offense from the middle of the order. So if you're prioritizing defense at those premium positions, they're batting eighth and ninth in the lineup, and your middle of the order is producing, you're not going to notice the lack of offensive production as much from those guys. And I don't think we're having as much of a complaint about what the lineup looks like right now. Obviously, I mean, even without Miles Michaelis, Kyle Gibson's more of a pitch to contact kind of guy. Lance Lynn, again, he's got the strikeout stuff, but you probably want a good defense behind anyone outside of Sonny Gray right now. And so they have been vigilant with it. I kind of wonder, and I would defer to you on this one a little bit about it, if there's any opportunity specifically with center field. I know it's such an important position, but I mean, you've seen defensive strides from Nolan Gorman this year. You have Mason Wynn in there every day now. Nolan Arenado looks more and more like himself at third base. Brendan Donovan's and probably a little bit below average as a left fielder. Jordan Walker's taken some steps forward in right field. He's not great by any means. He's better. I wonder if the collective improvement of the defense allows them to at least experiment a little bit with center field right now if the offense isn't getting going. I know that they haven't put Newt there at all, and I get this is more just my preference here.
Yeah.
And I know there's the knick-knack injuries he can get, but if that's going to continue to be a problem for him, that's a bigger issue and that he needs to figure out and the team needs to figure out long-term. But if this offense, I would say after this weekend, if it can't get going, is there any scenario in your head where and maybe it's just for a few games and like I know there's chemistry and there's momentum and you don't want to like start the defense kind of getting and making those little errors and mistakes, then it starts a thing. But I don't see a huge risk in trying things out with center field specifically for a little bit, because that's a way you can get Ivan Herrera in the lineup more often. And then you potentially have Jordan Walker batting ninth every day with like Mason Wynn eighth, Ivan Herrera seventh. Like that lineup is really strong and could make up for this offensive woes. And then as the middle of the order gets going, maybe you bring in some of those more defensive minded guys. But it's just tough to pinpoint, because you say, like, you look at the pitch and you're like, it's been fine so far, maybe make a change there, but does it regress a lot if you start to make those offensive upgrades? I don't know what you would say to that.
No, I think that's the exact crux of where this roster is at. Like, that's the decision that I think I don't know how heavily they're weighing it internally. The fact that we saw Siani start for Victor a couple of times over the past few days, and that Jordan Walker has been out of the lineup a few times the past few days, tell me they're at least teetering towards something like that, because they're searching. They're saying, well, we can get Siani in there, and that's not really a huge drop off in terms of the offense, but we're also not, or the defense rather, but we're also not running Victor out so often that, you know, I know people are worried about development. I'm on the side of the fence where I don't really care about it as much. I think he gets back to Memphis when he gets there, and then he can sort of pick up where he left off. And he's a smart enough guy to be able to go, all right, I had the success I had or didn't have at the big league level, but it doesn't have to affect me for my life. Let's just continue to get better at baseball. But like the Cardinals, they already feel like they're searching a little bit. And if they were 10-9 or 11-8 instead of 9-10, I think it's even lesser of a conversation. But to your point, the way they would have maybe gotten to 10-9 or 11-8 is by having a Goldschmidt hitting better or a Gorman hitting more consistently in the middle of the order. And they just haven't been able to get to that point. So yeah, I think they're constantly having to balance those elements, and they've been just like straining. It feels like they're waiting for the dam to break and going, all right, we're not hitting, but the dam hasn't broken because we're 9-10. And that's better than being, you know, 6-13 or whatever it could have been with an offense that ranks 23rd or 24th in OPS or whatever it's been to this point. Like if there's a moment in time, if it happens Friday night, that Goldschmidt hits two home runs and you go, oh my gosh, like it's that's exactly what we've been looking for, to not have to make some difficult decisions about changing around the defense that we think currently benefits our pitching staff in a way that it was designed to do. Like I think about how fervent the Cardinals were about Tommy Edman being the center fielder before they knew that his wrist was going to linger this long. It was like they were committed to him being every day. And it's like, well, what's his upside offensively? There's not really it's not that he didn't have upside, but just look at the numbers. He's about a league average hitter over the course of his career. Why are the Cardinals so hell bent on going, this is going to be our guy? It's because they saw the way he stabilized the defense as kind of the captain of that outfield without really ever having done it. His just natural athleticism took over to the extent that they felt really good about the job he would be able to do tracking down balls in the gaps for the pitching staff that is pitch to contact oriented. So even if they said, look, we know he's going to be a 99 OPS plus, that's good enough. can we just get a 90 to 95 OPS plus out of Victor? And then it's the same thing and maybe even a little bit better because he's got even more speed and maybe natural ability as a center fielder. I think that's why they made the move that they made. They gambled a little bit that Victor could be close to, he didn't have to be, you know, a 100 OPS plus, but could he be 80? Could he be 85? And the answer so far has been no, but you can understand why they did it. The problem with that too is you're also dealing with Jordan Walker struggling to the extent that he is, and he's not a plus defender. So I don't know it. Like, look, I don't know exactly when, Josh, I'll be able to release this podcast. I'll try to get it out before the game so that people can kind of sink their teeth into it before the Brewers series kicks off. But there's a world in which I show up to the ballpark later this afternoon and we've seen a roster move. I don't think it's impossible that they would do something with either Victor or Jordan Walker. It would feel a little bit premature, especially when the record's not bad. So why panic? But if they're not finding daily spots in the lineup for these two guys, that's how it happened for Walker last year when they sent him down in that San Francisco series. They had the spacious outfield they were playing in, and I think Ollie just looked at it and said, man, that's going to put our defense in a bit of a bind. You can't really have Burleson and Walker in the same outfield. We don't really have a center fielder right now that we trust. And so, like, that was, to me, a big part of why last year went off the rails when it did. Kind of an underrated part because everybody just looked at the pitching, but I think the outfield defense was part of the reason that the pitching ended up being so bad and never recovered. So I don't think it's an unfair ask to go, couldn't Nootbaar maybe just play a little bit of center field and think about how much better the lineup could be? I think they're just pleading for the middle of the order to produce so that they don't have to think about that sort of thing. But you can't score three runs every single day and expect that's going to be the way to win games. With the staff that they built. They built a staff that knowingly was going to give up 3-4 runs over 6 or 7 innings. And the fact that they got you through six meant you only had to use the 2 or 3 relievers that you really like every day. And the guys that are fresher are going to be the ones that get to pitch. And it's just a better situation for everybody. I think you stumbled upon the exact crux. I don't know exactly what to do about it, Josh. I don't know. Do you run Jordan Walker out every day and say he's going to come around offensively? It's what they're choosing to do with Goldschmidt, but he's also got a Hall of Fame caliber track record, whereas Jordan Walker is a 21-year-old player still kind of making his way. So I'll turn it around to you. I thought you asked a great question, but kind of where do you think all of that fits in and what stands out to you about the process they might have to go through if they're going to make a tough decision?
Yeah, I think you made a really good point about the record kind of puts them right in between. Do they need to make a move or not? Because if they're 3 games above 500 right now, we're probably not talking about it at all. If they're 4 or 5 games under 500, they probably already made the switch with how the offense is playing. So I really do think that this Brewers series could be the make or break of it. They take 2 of 3. Maybe they just keep going the same course right now. Even if the offense isn't improved, again, their record at this point is at least in good enough spot. They take 2, they'd be 11-11, right?
I think that's right. 2 or 3, they'd be back at 500 where they haven't really been able to get above. But yeah, that would be kind of status quo probably, right?
Yeah, and against the Brewers, that's a big series as well. So, but then if they lose 2 of 3, then they're at 10-13 or 10-12 on the year. So I think semantics there matters a little bit. I also think it's interesting that obviously these stats can be inflated because I'll just give them out and then kind of give the preference here. But when they score 3 or more runs this year, they're 5-1, or over 3 runs this year, they're 5-1. And when they score 3 or less runs, they're 4-9. And so it's just, they just got to get a little bit more from the offense right now. I also think it's really interesting. You look at the breakdown. They have 5 guys who are 19% above league average at the plate right now. And they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys that are 70% or 30% below league average or worse right now. And like, Victor Scott has a negative WRC plus. I don't think I've ever seen that before. That's wild.
Not over a large sample size. Yeah, that's
tough. Jordan Walker's at 53 right now. Paul Goldschmidt's at 54. So even if just 1 or 2 of those guys can get closer to league average, they basically have a bunch of bats that are out that are playing really well or that are playing horribly. They don't really have many league average guys right now. So I really do think this Brewers series is going to be the make or break for them right now, where they might have to make a roster move, whether it's sending Jordan Walker down. But that's even one where I'm like, if you send him down, who plays in the corner outfields? I guess it's Donovan and Nootbaar.
And what do you gain, right? Because what do you gain? I guess you could put Burleson or Donovan in left, but you're kind of already able to do that. And Walker's supposed to be the guy hitting. Do you think Burleson is going to out hit like Donovan? Maybe the answer though, Josh, is I guess it would be Ivan Herrera can catch or DH, and that's the guy that is added to the lineup most days. And you don't have to, because I've said, I think I tweeted the other day, I don't know how you do it every single day, but you have to write Herrera's name somewhere. I'm that guy that says, I'm going to tell you about a problem and I do not have a solution to offer you, but you need to do something about it. That's kind of where the stance I took with Herrera. And it's not a fair stance to take if you're Ollie Marmol, because he's got to leave somebody out if he puts somebody in. And that could be the route they go, is the Walker one. But then there are going to be people who go, well, if you're sending somebody down, I mean, Vic has really struggled. And we've at least seen a track record from Jordan where at 20/21 last year, he had a 780 some odd OPS. Like, that's incredible for what. But right now he does look a little broken at times. I will say in the Oakland series, he had a few swings where you go, all right, that's kind of what you're looking for. I think the sacrifice fly that he had that was slightly right of center, but it was pretty deeply hit and pretty well struck, is like, that tells you he's kind of getting right on it. So maybe you don't want to make a move with a guy who you feel like could be turning the corner. Because to me, that's how Arenado looked a week ago. And it was like, okay, he's having a couple of these swings where like it's about to come through. And then we've seen him really kind of turn it on offensively. So I think that could be a way to do it. And then the other way is you send down Vic and you let Newt Barr play some center field. But you're talking about, if you think Donovan's a little below average in left, which I think, you know, he did win a gold glove for moving all around, but it's not easy for an infielder to just be that outfielder. So let's just say he's average, even if that's a little generous. Newt Barr, I think, is average in center, but the instincts just aren't the same as a Victor Scott or even a Ciani or even a Dylan Carlson in my mind, or even Tommy Edman. It's just, you might have to make that kind of move if you're trying to bolster the lineup. Offensively, I think it could give him that kind of jolt where if you go Donnie, Newton center, and then the right field is, if it's still Jordan Walker, who's coming around a little bit, that defense is what you go. Do you cost your pitching staff runs, and do you kind of go back into the same pattern that you fell into at the beginning of last year as a result of that? That's why I do think it is a difficult question and a difficult conversation that, yeah, there's maybe no real easy answer to. And the record is maybe what's going to dictate it. They could win tonight 3-2, and the offense could still be the same thing, but you could say, look, it worked. Someone made a diving catch, and the pitching is still feeling good about it. You don't have innings extended by errors in the outfield, or really it wasn't even errors. It was plays not made. It was balls that just didn't get – guys didn't track them down last year, and they fall in front of somebody. That happened so often last year. They're having to prioritize two different things. Life is easy if they have a center fielder OPS plusing 95. I mean, seriously, yeah, that changes this thing in a major, major way. And right now they just don't have it. They can't have both, and they've got to pick which thing they value.
Yeah. I think the parts where I would lean toward, I think it's, I know that neither of us are freaking out about Jordan Walker or Victor Scott, but the part of me that would lean toward, keep riding it out with Walker. He's 76th percentile in range right now. He's one about outs above average. And last year it was historically bad in right field. So he's, yeah, again, small sample size, but it looks like he's I don't know if it's safe to call him league average yet, but he's at least closer to below league average at this point. I feel okay about him. Eye test wise out there, I haven't seen the like crazy, every once in a while he's got one where I'm like, okay, but for the most part, I feel okay about him out there now. And then he's also 86th percentile in average exit velocity. So he's hitting the ball hard. It's just, yeah, in the ground, which has always been the problem for him.
Which is what you want Victor to be doing.
So it's like, if they could flip, oh man, it'd be perfect.
It'd be absolutely gold. And here's the one thing I'll say. And I was outspoken about thinking Victor should have the shot. And I stand by that. I thought, this is worthwhile to pursue, because what if he does end up OPSing 90? He's holding the zone, and suddenly you have a great answer for the defense that's going to help your pitching staff a lot in center field. But it hasn't worked out that way, obviously. What I will say, though, is if they're going to be sitting him 3 out of every 4 games like they did over the past week, I send him down at that point. If he's not going to be starting, I do see the benefit, and they've used him as a defensive replacement late. But I think I get it. If you're trying to hide his bat to that extent, probably just go ahead, even though it's nice to maybe have a pinch runner who could come in and then play the field. I get all that. I think that is where I would draw the line of saying, all right, that probably doesn't help his development. If he's running out there and losing and failing, that's okay. I still think he can bounce back from that at some point when he eventually gets sent down. They would love to bridge the gap till when Edman or Carlson gets back. I don't think April is that answer. It's just not going to be. It's going to be probably mid-May or so. Those guys are taking things pretty slowly with the rehab. Now, if there comes a day later this week where they go, oh, they're out on an assignment, that mindset can change rather quickly. Like, oh, you can just ride out the storm with Victor, and then maybe you send him down when one of those guys comes back. But otherwise, like, there is sort of a decision to be made. But if you're sitting him anyway, that's what I would say. All right, go ahead and do something. Even if it's Ciani that you run out there, it's Ciani. The Nootbaar thing would be interesting because I do think it could help the lineup, but you're going to have to make a decision about what you're giving up there. So it is very interesting. I think that's probably the most interesting conversation around this roster right now. Everything else is two expectations. We know the hitting is not, but that's we've kind of beat that down as well. So I feel like we've done a nice job here, Josh, but before I let you go, I want to ask you a little bit about what you got going on, because I know Newt News becomes Dealing the Cards and you guys are doing a lot of different things. What's that been like to get that started with some of your buddies and kind of get into the podcasting world? Cause we're doing a lot of the same stuff, just trying to put out content that Cardinals fans like. And I think you guys do an awesome job, but just kind of riff on that for a minute. And if something comes to my mind to ask you about it, I will.
Yeah, thanks, man. And to you as well. I mean, I'm always trying to check in with B-Shape Daily. And so it's good stuff. And I feel like it's Cardinals YouTube space podcast stuff has really grown in the last year. And I feel like there's a lot of really good stuff out there, which is really fun. We record twice a week, Dealing the Cards, formerly the Newt News podcast. And we try to kind of mix it up and do a variety of things. Like this past time, we did like a tier list of how we were grading the players this year and just kind of fun like that. We'll bring on like yourself or Katie Wu or Derek Gold or those type of people that talk about what's going on around the ballpark right now. We started rolling out some like fun, like Jolly Olive type videos where we're trying to do like weird rankings, or we're doing some historical videos looking back at some players. So we just try to keep fresh content, Cardinals centric, that's all over the place with stuff. And I mean, we try to be laid back and fun with it. We have some memes that people hold us to. Like I've got this whole Carrie and Moe's water it's bottle beautiful. That one of them got me.
I love it.
Apparently, anytime you compliment what the Cardinals do, you're getting paid off by John Mozeliak. So I'm sure you've heard that plenty of times.
Oh, I usually, you know what? And I've been pretty open about, hey, look, if this doesn't go well, you can point to Mo and say like,
yeah,
this was the roster he built. I thought that was the case last year. He had a strategy coming into this year. We've just complimented his pitching strategy because it is working, but that only coincides with the offense being what he thought it would be. And they didn't really do anything to the offense. And I didn't mind that. We just thought these players would be better, but even if it's players that we thought would be good that underachieves, he still picked them. So you still would look to that direction. And I think that's almost part of, people don't understand the Ollie extension. That's almost part of why it happens, so that he can go, look, I'm going to take the heat on this. It's not about this guy. This guy's going to, we're going to make him be okay here with the job and the, we're not going to, people are going to have questions, of course. And if Mo ever, you know, departs a year early from his succession plan, then maybe they'll have a different conversation about manager for whoever's in charge next. But I think that's part of it too, is like, if I'm carrying the water for anybody, it feels like it's Ollie at times, because people, the vitriol to Ollie Marmol sometimes is like, I think people have it be, it's a little bit misrepresented. But also I say this, I remember being a kid and Tony La Russa was the manager and he's in the Hall of Fame. And people were, I mean, somebody mentioned it in a YouTube comment the other day to me that there was like a banner flying out of a blimp or the back of a plane of Fire Tony. Like people hated Tony La Russa when things were even going just a little bit off the kilter. And those Cardinals teams always won. They had like one losing season for, you know, 11 years or whatever it was, 15 years that he was here, from 2000 to 2011. I mean, it was mostly great times, and yet still people didn't like the manager. So what I always say is anybody could be the Cardinal manager and it won't matter who it is, but people are going to be upset at that person. And because there are things to pick at with Ollie, he's not as old and experienced as some people. So they say, oh, he's in over his head. There'll be a lot of different things that you can pick at. People love to kind of snipe the post game show and say, well, why did he say that? That doesn't sound very smart. When you're on camera every time and you lose 91 times in a year, after the game, you're probably going to be pissed off 91 times of the year. So those are going to be the things that people see and say, well, that's why they don't like Ollie. I am ultimately on the side of, I think Ollie's pretty good. So because of that, inevitably it's, oh, is Ollie your dad? Like all this, like the comments are ridiculous, but and I'll say this, and you probably already know this, and I don't always do a good job of it, but you have to sometimes let some of the comments just go. Like they're venting and it just kind of is what it is. But yeah, if I'm carrying anybody's water, according to the people who my audience, they would probably say it's Ollie's, but I like the water bottle and it's fun that you guys kind of have those jokes on the show.
Yeah. And I think that's really the heart of why I got into all this in the first place, is that it just felt like there was a disconnect. And again, I'm not acting like I'm perfect at it all, but there's a disconnect between the reporting, what the beat writers are putting out there, and how fans feel about all of it. And I want to try to bridge the gap of, it's okay to be a fan and be excited and be frustrated about things, but also understand the process of how things happen. And the Cardinals can't spend like the Dodgers, and they're not going to make every perfect decision. And it's just, that's not how baseball works. And so to kind of, instead of sitting around just screaming, why didn't they sign Jordan Montgomery for 8 straight months? Be like, okay, here's what they have. What can they do with it? What's realistic? And how do you actually win games with this rotation? I'd rather focus on stuff like that because it makes the season fun rather than watching every single game and being frustrated that Randy Arozarena isn't there. It's like, that's right. It's not going to change anything. So, and it doesn't mean you can't hold leadership accountable, things like that. But to your Ollie Marmol point, it felt like last year, everyone said the pitching staff was just so terrible. There's no way they can win. But then they'd blame Ollie for the pitching issues. And I'm like, well, which one is it? Is it the pitching's not good enough or is it Ollie can't manage it? There can be a both and, but I think it was pretty clear last year that it didn't matter if the late Whitey Herzog was in there. I don't think that team wins a lot of games last year. It just was a flawed club. And I mean, you go around to every team in baseball, most fans are complaining about their manager. So it's not unique to St. Louis. Obviously, Ollie has a few videos out there, like the grabbing the security guard the other day.
Like, great.
I did too. It was so funny. I love that you made the little meme. When we did our tier list thing, we used that as Ollie's picture.
That's great.
It's perfect now. So, I like Ollie, but at the same time, coming into this year, like you said, like it feels like everyone's really in the hot seat. But Mo giving that extension really kind of put the pressure on himself, and so. I mean, not to make this podcast under 20 minutes, but I would be curious long term, like if things were to go south, if that would accelerate his potential stepping out of that role, and what that would look like and what a future of the Cardinals does look like if things, because he kind of opened the door a little bit at winter warm up in that fan session to like, you know, if things don't go well, we do have expiring contracts. We do have some outs here. I've never really heard them talk like that before, which is just really interesting. And last year obviously was an anomaly. It hadn't happened since the 90s. And so this is just unfamiliar territory for Cardinals fans, which is probably contributing to the angst.
Yeah. And let's deep tease that because we can do another show where like we can just, people will know going in, don't worry about this year. This year is going to be this year, but we can explore that because to me, it's a really interesting topic. That's not entirely fair to do just yet because of the fact that maybe 2024 levels out and it ends up being fine. But I would say the way they built the roster out was almost inherently there's a design to pull the parachute and do some different things that would still keep the Cardinals competitive in 2025. And if not competitive, at least interesting enough to where the fans would still support it on $100 to $110 million payroll. And that sounds like they're at like 185 right now. So that would be a big reduction. I don't think it's that unrealistic to where if they win 78 games this year, maybe even in that world, they could still pull the parachute. So let's do that again in another podcast. But yeah. I wanted to dig in a little bit and I'm glad you got a chance to kind of talk about what you guys are doing with dealing the cards because I look at like my podcast is I'm a reporter. I write, I credentialed, go to games, not all of them, but the ones that I can and cover these games for KMOV Channel 4. And so I feel like when I see you talk and see the different things that you say at times, I know you're a Cardinals fan, but I think you're almost like me if I didn't have the job that I have. Now, it took having the job that I have in order to get to a place that you're at as just a fan, because I grew up a Cardinal fan. I tell people I'm not that anymore because having the job it was siphoned out of me and I go, oh no, where'd it go? Like the Monstars taking my talent or something. It's not like that. It was just a natural thing that happened when I started covering the team. I was like, oh, I see it from a different perspective. I was crazed fan guy in high school and college, and certainly as a younger kid, where I mean, I was saying, "What's Matheny doing?" Like back in 2013, like I was along the ride with everybody else, and then I started covering the team, and there were still times where I'm like, "What is Matheny doing?" But that's neither here nor there. It just sort of changed my perspective, where now people are like, "Well, I assume Brendan's a Cardinal fan because he does these YouTube so much," and it's not unfair because there are people that just don't really know. Well, how does it work? He does a job here. He goes, I don't have the fandom at this point. It's just, I'm invested in the Cardinals still, and I love it because it's the team I've always followed, but now it's a much different perspective. But what I appreciate about you is I feel like you have a pretty level head about it that I wouldn't have been able to have if I didn't get as close to it as I've gotten. And that kind of flipped it on for me. So you had much more emotional maturity about this baseball team than I ever did before I started this. So I wanted to give you props for that because I think the different fan podcasts and stuff and your guys that you're on with, they're hardcore Cardinals fans too. I like that you can kind of level them out of all the jokes and stuff on your podcast. I'm like, no, I'll take the guy with the Moe's water, you know, carries Moe's water bottle because I feel like that makes for compelling too. You can't just have everybody be mad all the time. You're a good foil to what those guys are doing and they bring great energy and they back up their opinions and stuff with facts as well. So I think it ends up being a really nice dynamic. So they're not Newt News anymore, which I credit you. I DM'd you right away. I said, you changed the branding. I think that's interesting. I think that was a good call because it's kind of tough. Like, who knows what the future would bring, and your kind of brand is around this one player. As you guys start to go, hey, this thing's taking off a little bit. We're doing some nice things. So I thought that was good. And now you have the cards tie in. So props on that and everything. That's not a question, but that was all the thoughts that kind of came out about what you guys have going on. So that's what I have for you.
Thanks, Brandon. I really appreciate it. And also, like, I think it grew over time. Cause like when I first started doing my writing and stuff, like, I mean, I was unrealistic even with stuff, but then I rubbed shoulders with you. I talked to different reporters out there, and it's just like, that's just not how the game works. And so like, you can either sit here and be really frustrated about it and wish that all 30 teams played Dodgers baseball, or you can real look at the Cardinals organization as it is and figure out how things go. And then I got to be at winter warmup this last year, which was great. But then when you're around the people, it humanizes the game a lot more too. And it's way easier to get super frustrated, call out people, call for everyone's jobs when you're on the other side of a screen. But when you get to be with the people, get to know people, have dialogue with people, there's a lot, it's a lot more gray than people give it credit for. And I like that you pointed out that like Andrew and Sandy are like a foil to me, because there are sometimes I get too heel dug in defending things where it's like, you know what? This is stupid. I should be mad about that.
Yes.
So it's a both and, but I think we tend to get too emotional about things. And that's part of what's awesome about Cardinal fans and why I love following the game is that they care about every inning. And there's fan bases. I know people that follow teams that are like, yeah, check the standings once a month and see how they're doing and whatever. But Cardinals fans live and die by every inning. And that's it's not how baseball works. And so your emotions go all over the place and you get too angsty about things. But it's also what makes this a beautiful fan base and why I like being a part of it.
Yeah, I feel like Cardinals fans, you mentioned like the live and die with every inning over 162. The way to sum it up is like Cardinal fans are so passionate. They have like a college football mindset about an MLB season. Yeah. And that can be a really interesting thing that if you're somebody like me, where I'm coming on here every day, it's like, well, I'm tired of hearing this guy basically say that it's not as bad as we think. And then you lose last year, if that was your mindset, because it was way worse than we thought it could have been. And now we're kind of coming out of that and trying to figure out where it goes from here. So great stuff, Josh. I appreciate you taking the time. Follow Josh on Twitter at JoshJacoMLB. And you can follow Dealing the Cards, the Cardinals-based podcast that Josh does with his buddies, Andrew and Sandy, on all platforms, I assume, right? You guys are on YouTube. You guys are everywhere. So Dealing the Cards, that's what you should look out for. And make sure to keep up with what Josh and them have going on, because it's a lot of good stuff. We're going to wrap it here. We'll talk soon. We'll do it again. And we'll just say, hey, 2025, let's land in the hypothetical world where the Cardinals season doesn't go well. What could happen from there? Because I think we could riff on that for a little bit of time.
Let's do it. I'm excited. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thank you so much. Follow Josh. Hit subscribe on this YouTube channel. Follow B-Shape Daily and the like, and we'll talk to you next time. Peace.